We're starting our study in chapter 2 of the Confession, paragraph 1, and we'll be looking only at paragraph 1, understanding God's attributes. This is a beautiful narrative paragraph that captures the attributes of God in a conversational way. So you could almost imagine yourself saying this, and that's the whole point of a confession of faith. It's your confession of faith. If someone were to ask you, you know, what do you know about God? You could just envision yourself saying something like this. Well, there's only one God. He's the living and true God. He's self-existent. He's infinite. We can't comprehend everything about him, but he is spirit. He doesn't have a body like men. He's immortal, and he dwells in light, which, as Timothy says, unapproachable. So on we would go. So that's the point I'm trying to communicate here. In the first and the second paragraph especially, the personal pronoun, he and his, is used 21 times. Well, that's a lot for just four sentences. As opposed to the first person, me or I, it's all about him. 21 times in the second paragraph is the same. I didn't count those yet, but I'm sure it's over 20, over a couple dozen times you find that. So it's all about him. The scripture references that you see at the end, which we didn't really talk about under our study of chapter 1, are in, we call this canonical order. Usually we talk about chronological order. If you have a list of names or church directory, it's in chronological order. So in terms of the Bible, we talk about the canonical order. So the canonical order of Bible books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that's called the canonical order, the order of the canon. And so the verses, it's a little challenging because the verses listed at the end of each paragraph are canonical order, so they're not linked to the sentences. So you have to make the connections. You have to look up the verses and then ask yourself, well, which statement in this paragraph were they thinking of here? And then also keep in mind that I don't know the history of the scripture referencing in the Confession of Faith. I just never really studied it out. But the scripture references are not exhaustive, so there are just tons of others you could put in here. And sometimes it seems, in certain parts of the confession, they're not always the best choices. And there is one here in this list, Jeremiah 23, 23, and 24. I wasn't sure of the placement, that is where it went. You don't have to look it up now, I'm just saying. So that happens sometimes, and I don't know the explanation for that. So in thinking about how to present this to you this morning and looking over this paragraph, which we want to take a class on this because we're talking about the attributes of God here. And it's a different subject than the subject in paragraph 2, and of course a very different subject than the paragraph 3, which is the Trinity, which is just such a big subject and mind-stretching. So this one is on the attributes of God. And I'm sure that you must have a book or two in your library at home on the attributes of God. Stephen Charnock, the Puritan, big fat book. The Attributes of God, Puritan book. You may have that or may have seen that. Or even something more popular like Arthur Pink, The Attributes of God. And there are just so many of them. Bible studies on the attributes of God, they just abound. But let's start by talking about the statements of the confession that refer to the identity of God. There is but one and one only living and true God. So what does it say about his identity? I see three words that they use here. It talks about his being, and his perfections, and his essence. His being, his perfections, and his essence. So these are not attributes. It's just talking about God's being, and his essence. Those two are similar. His being, his essence. Paragraph 3 talks about his essence as triune. He's a trinity. So that's his essence. Being and essence are really the same thing. Our being is what we are, our nature, our essence. So we're talking about, we're introducing the subject of God's being and essence, and then perfections takes you a little further, because now it's an adjective. It's a statement about his being. So if you talk about the being of God, then the question is, well, what do you know about this God? And one thing we know about him is that he has perfections. And naturally, in the confession here, the perfections are going to be his attributes. And that's the biggest part of paragraph 1, is the mention of all of his attributes. Then you have, so you have the identity of God, and then you have the properties and attributes. So it's helpful to understand the difference between a property and an attribute. The properties that are listed here in paragraph 1 are such things as spirit, pure spirit, or invisible. So invisible is not an attribute of God. Love, and that's an attribute. Grace is an attribute. Justice is an attribute, but not invisible. So we call that a property. Pure spirit. Invisible. And then this long phrase, which unfortunately in the past number of years has become a very hotly debated subject, without body parts or passions, or without body parts or changeable feelings of men. But that's a description of God's properties. To say, what is God like? The answer is going to be, in terms of his properties, well, he's a pure spirit. He is invisible. He doesn't have a body like men, as the Catechism put it. He doesn't have parts. That's usually referred to as the divine simplicity. He's not made up of parts. He's one. He is a single essence, although he exists in three persons. And I like the way this edition of the Confession rendered that phrase, without passions, he doesn't have the changeable feelings of men. So you wouldn't necessarily read that. You wouldn't read that and say, well, God doesn't have feelings, because we know the God of the Bible has feelings, but he doesn't have changeable feelings. That means he's not fickle. And another property is glory. And another statement about that is the longer statement, amid the light insufferably bright to mortal men, or what Paul called to Timothy, unapproachable light, which is the same thing. Unapproachable light means that it's a light too bright for mortal men. So these are his properties. And now you have the attributes, which are woven into this confession, and there are many of them here. So the first one that is listed here is self-existent. We almost could put that up with the property. It's not a big deal here. The distinguishing properties and attributes, but you could put that under the properties as well. Self-existent, that might be better. Pure spirit, he's spirit, he is invisible, he's unapproachable, he is self-existent, could be either way. Infinite is an attribute. The infinity of God is an attribute, so that would work with that. Immortal, he never changes, so he's changeless. That's an attribute. One of the attributes of people is that we change. So we're changeable, but he's unchangeable. Great beyond all our conceptions. Eternal, incomprehensible, almighty, infinite. Put that twice. Holy, wise, free, absolute. Again, changeless. They put both in there. Never changes and changeless. Righteous. Talk about his righteous will, love. Or his changeless, righteous will, his love. He is gracious, he is merciful, he is compassionate, He is good, he is true, or we could say the attribute of truth, forgiving, and just in judgment. So the justice of God, this is an attribute. So this is a listing of over 20 attributes of God, and they're not categorized as we would find them in a theological book. So it's refreshing. I mean, that is needed, the theological treatments of God's attributes and the different ways of... Recently reading, some weeks ago, reading Joel Beakey's new systematic theology, recent systematic theology, and he has a nice section there on how the different ways that theologians in history have categorized the attributes of God. And you might expect that's what you're going to find, that there are different ways to categorize them. But this is not a categorization. It's a confession. It's a story. It's a narrative, something you can use to share your faith. But it is 20 attributes or more listed. So let's take this paragraph apart, quote unquote, because we are dealing with a collection from Scripture on the attributes of God, just as with the properties that I mentioned a minute ago. So before we do that, let's return to the original thought that of this narrative, not a list. It's a confession, a description of the God that we know and love and appreciate and worship and believe in. It is just the same if you were to tell someone how wonderful your mother or father is. It would be the same type of thing. You would give a description in this kind of form. You wouldn't say, well, point number one, my mother is... Point number two, point number three, she's this. Point number four. Or your wife or your husband, someone you love. You would say, he is like this. He does this. He treats me like this. He takes care of me. He thinks of me. Or she was this and she was that. And the memory of her fills my mind and heart when I think of her. I'm wrapped up in her blanket of love. You know, you would explain her in that way, your mother, your wife, whoever it is, your daughter, whoever. And then there are a few explanatory sentences here, such as, none but he can comprehend or understand his essence. So you see, it's not the statement of an attribute, God is love, but it is a statement about this issue of comprehending. None but he can comprehend or understand his essence. So that's something to unpack. You know what it means. We know what it means. This is not a statement or an attribute, though we discover an attribute here. Could you put this in the form of an attribute? None but he can comprehend or understand his essence. Could you put that in the form of an attribute? Could you describe that phrase by an attribute? I don't have an answer because I didn't do this, but I'm asking you if you want to do it. Can you put that in the form of an attribute? Can you say, none but he can comprehend or understand his essence? Is it possible to give that a title like an attribute? Unfathomable. Unfathomable? Very good. Excellent. It's a confession that God is higher than us, and we cannot expect to plumb the depths of his being. In other words, according to Isaiah 55 and verse 9, my thoughts are not your thoughts. And see, they don't list Isaiah 55:9, but that's an important verse. And there are lots of verses. And as we go through the confession, we are not going to try to, you know, make it better and put in more verses. But we cannot expect to plumb the depths of his being, that there's a mystery. He's unfathomable. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And then it also says, all that he does is the outworking of his changeless righteous will and for his own glory. So that's similar. All that he does. Now it's talking about his deeds, his works. And Isaiah 55 verse 9 actually starts with that. My ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. I think that's the order. So this too is a confession of humility on our part, recognizing that God's ways are higher than our ways, his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Another phrase in paragraph one is the phrase, he rewards those who seek him diligently. Or in some of the manuscripts, just say, he rewards those who seek him, and didn't include the word diligently, but that's not very significant. We'll go with this. He rewards those who seek him diligently. But the truth is, he just rewards those who seek him. So this is from Hebrews 11:6, and that verse is listed in the references. It is a confession on our part that seeking God is not a fruitless or vain activity. It's not frustrating. It is not frustrating to seek after God. If you seek him, you will find him. And he will reward you for seeking him. It's fruitful, it's profitable, and it's valuable. Naturally, it's valuable. It's the most important thing that we do, is to seek God. Another phrase here, explanatory phrase, is he is perfectly just in executing judgment. Think of it, he is perfectly just in executing judgment. So the attribute is justice. And another attribute that would also be related to this would be what? The attribute of God's, starts with a W.
Well,
no. Judgment.
Wrath.
So it's an attribute. But in the confession here, it is stated as a confession, meaning that I believe that God is perfectly just in executing judgment. And judgment doesn't need to be wrath, but it can be just, for example, judgment on a decision, such as someone tells you, the choice that you made was wrong. That's a judgment. Or the church sometimes has to say, this action is wrong. That's a judgment. So that's a confession that of ours that, what is it? The hymn, how does it go? All that the Lord ordains is right. What's the exact wording? Whatever my God ordains is right. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay.
It's not a question. It's more a comment. It's okay.
It's okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. All right. Well, since you say it's okay, we'll go on. But if you wanted to make your comment, you could.
I don't want to take as far afield, but it's just...
Well, don't worry. I won't let you.
Okay.
Believe me, I will not let you. Okay. We have so much time, and that's it. So.
Okay. It's just the... I guess I'm not really familiar with the Carey publications, but it seems to me that the rendering of, let's say, in the place of passions, changeable feelings of men,
Yeah. Needs
to me to be basically a decision made on the controversy is inserted into the language of the...
No, it's not based on that, though. This was done way long ago.
So the original language is passions, right? Right, that's with without body parts and passions.
I believe.
Right, and so, the doctrine connected to it, the doctrine of impassibility.
Right.
The idea of putting,
body parts or passions.
Changing the feelings of men.
Right.
Versus passions are not, they're not saying this, they're not necessarily saying the same thing, right? So it looks like more a decision made on a position, or even maybe let's say even a particular interpretation inserted into the language.
The Carey Publications is in England, and they published this like 30 years ago. They call it a modern version. We've had it for years, so it had nothing to do with the present controversy. But let's move on. It's obviously a difference in wording, and it's really an update of language. From the original Confession of 1689, it's just an updated language. If you want to compare them, if you're into that, you can get the original one and this one, and it's pretty much the same thing. So we'll come back to that, though, in just a few minutes. So some of the verses, I wanted to read some of the verses that you'll see listed at the end, which, again, remember, are in canonical order, so you have to fit them in. So as far as this first sentence, there is but one, the only one, living and true God. He is self-existent and infinite in his being. In his perfections, you have verses like Exodus 3:14, I am who I am, God said to Moses. Deuteronomy 6:4, these are very important Old Testament statements, foundational. The Lord is our God, the Lord is one, the Shema. Add to this way over in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 6, for us, there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things,